You are Locked On Phillies, your daily Philadelphia Phillies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, guys? It is Monday, June 15th, 2020. This is Locked On Phillies. I'm Tim Kelly. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your first order. Today's show is also brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit RockAuto.com and tell them Locked On Phillies sent you. So as I've reminded everyone ad nauseum on here, we are celebrating Cliff Lee Month on PhilliesNation.com right now in honor of the incredible month of June of 2011 that Cliff Lee had. So I reached out to the great Chris Wheeler to have him reminisce about what it was like to call games where Cliff Lee started and what Cliff, who is pretty mysterious as a person as far as the general public knows, what he was like to deal with as a person. He gave great insight on all things. Let's take a listen. All right, so first of all, you're a historian of the game. What has a summer so far without baseball, what has that been like for you?
Well, I hate it. It unfortunately reminds me so much of 1994 and some of the other years when we had the labor stoppages. And, you know, the one year, of course, in 94 was disastrous. Lost the playoffs, World Series, and then had that replacement player stuff the year before finally settling right before the season was to get underway in 95. So it's a combination of things of not having the game, which was understandable because of the COVID-19 thing, but knowing now that if sensible heads would just get together, could have gotten started and dominated the sports scene right now and had it all to ourselves. So it's very unfortunate.
Yeah, it certainly is, and that's one of the reasons why we're harkening back to the past and discussing some history instead of focusing too much on that. And I had Brad Lidge on a few weeks ago, and he admitted he was pretty shocked when the Phillies traded Cliff Lee away after the 2009 season. Obviously, they lost in the World Series, but Cliff Lee and Chase Utley had iconic World Series performances. And I mean, obviously, no one in retrospect or even at the time is going to complain about acquiring Roy Halladay and a corresponding move. But do you remember having that same feeling of shock when you heard that Cliff Lee was traded?
Yeah, I wasn't shocked as much as I knew that, back in those days, I had a feel for things. Now I'm a fan. I'm just like all you guys. I don't know anything until I hear it or I have opinions. But back then, you know, I had access to some of the interlockings going on in the organization, and I knew that there was a chance of that happening because they said that they needed to do some things to restock the farm system from all of the players that had been traded before that, including in the Halladay deal. So anyway, that was the reasoning that was given. Obviously, it didn't work out that way because the players they got back, none of them really worked out. That was the logic behind it. I don't think money, money's always, there's always money involved, but I think they could have gotten by that. It just seems like they really wanted to do something to restock the farm system at the time, and that was the excuse they gave. And, you know, at the time you could either accept that or not, and there were two schools of thought on that. I guess in retrospect, when you look back on it, it certainly didn't work out the way they hoped it would.
So Cliff Lee spent the 2010 season split with the Mariners and the Rangers. I don't know if you would say it's his best season, but it's one of the most efficient seasons that a pitcher has ever had, and the Phillies corrected that mistake that offseason. They brought him back in free agency, and in my lifetime at least, other than the Eagles winning the Super Bowl, Cliff Lee returning to Philadelphia in free agency is the most excited I have ever seen Philadelphia about sports. What was your reaction when you first learned that he was coming back to Philadelphia?
Yeah, I lived through, of course, acquiring Steve Carlton, which was really nice. And then the Pete Rose thing was as close as I equated it to the Cliff Lee thing. And it was different because back when we acquired Rose, you didn't have all the media attention that the Lee thing dictated. So it was Christmas morning, you know, Christmas Eve, Christmas morning. That's the way I equated it at the time. I knew that they were involved a little bit, but boy, they really, even for those of us around the organization, they really kept that under wraps. I mean, they did a great job with that. And it basically, it came out when he signed. So that was another thing, Tim, I think that was so good about it and so much fun about it, was that it was such a surprise. It's really hard to keep things a surprise nowadays, as you know. I mean, what you do with your blog and your writing and all that, there's so many people out there doing that sort of stuff, and they're all fighting for scoops, and they're trying to get something first or get some news out there. But if you remember, that thing was really, really quiet and a tremendous surprise when it hit.
Yeah, I remember that night. It really started to circulate around like 9 or 10 p.m., and I think I remember listening to Tony Bruno that night, his national show that he had at the time. And yeah, it was a national show, but it turned into just a show talking about, oh, my God, Cliff Lee's coming back to Philadelphia. It was crazy. But
yeah,
on Phillies Nation right now, we're celebrating June of 2011, which is not only Lee's best month, but one of the very best the Phillies ever had. And it's funny because all the excitement for Lee coming back, he actually had a 3.94 ERA after the first 2 months of that season. So it wasn't like he was setting the world on fire. And then June of 2011 comes and he goes 5-0, 0.21 ERA, three straight complete games to finish out the month. You've been around the Phillies for decades. Where does that rank among the greatest stretches that you've ever seen?
Well, it ranks near the top. I mean, lefties was the greatest I've ever seen in person in 72 when Steve Carlton won 15 straight games for an awful team. So, I mean, that was just remarkable what he was able to do. And but when you see what Cliff Lee did, now, of course, Cliff Lee was pitching for a really good team in 2011, a team that was, unfortunately, that was going to be the last hurrah for that group. But he was just dominant. And the thing about him was, he made it look so easy. You know, Doc, I think that year Doc finished second in the Cy Young and Lee finished third. Kershaw won, I think it was something like that. But they were so different. Halladay was, every pitch was an effort. Every pitch was a war. Cliff Lee would go out there and just make it look so easy, and he had so much fun. And he was such a good fielder, too. If you remember, the guy could really field his position, and he could swing the bat, too, and get a bunt down. Especially for a guy that had spent so much time in the American League. He was such a tremendous athlete. So everything that I look back on that month was, he made it look easy before, I mean, when he was here the first time. But for him to do that in our ballpark, what, four out of the five starts were in our ballpark. He didn't throw a home run ball the whole month. And in our ballpark, to not throw a home run in four starts and a lot of more complete games was really remarkable. So I think everything about that, the thing I look back on more than anything, I think, was he reminded me of Lefty, how easy he made it look when he was good like that.
What was Cliff like to deal with as a person? Because by the time I had started writing about the Phillies, was really the tail end of his career, and he was injured a ton. And you hear different things. Because people loved him so much as a pitcher, he seemed like he had this fun personality. And then as since he's retired, and obviously this is his right, he's fallen off the face of the earth. The only time I ever remember seeing or hearing anything is when Roy Halladay passed away. So we really, for as much time as spent talking about Roy Halladay and Cliff Lee, it feels like we know so little about those two as people.
Yeah, we know a lot more about Doc now, obviously, because of the ESPN and all the stuff that's been written and said about him. Todd Zielecki writing a book and all that. So, Lee is a guy, I'm not going to tell you I knew either one of them very well, because I didn't. They were both very private. They weren't real guys that, you know, we were considered the media, I think, as broadcasters were in the old days. You know, we were one of the guys that just kind of hung around with them and knew them really well. So I didn't know either one of them very well. Lee was, they were easy to deal with if you needed something from them. I mean, you could go up and talk to them and they would talk to you. Lee was two different guys though, and I think most people will tell you this, and I'm not going to get into why, because I don't know. But the Cliff Lee that we had first and the Cliff Lee who came back was a totally different guy. The guy who came back was much more sullen and difficult to deal with. And you can talk to the media guys who were around in those days and see if they kind of back that up. we even noticed it as broadcasters that he wasn't the same guy. He didn't seem like he was enjoying himself as much the second time. And so I said, I'm not going to try and have all kinds of conjecture on it, but some people felt that he had a little burr under his saddle about the what you and I talked about earlier, about the Phillies moving him when he was so comfortable. He and his family were so comfortable being here and living downtown and the whole lifestyle and enjoy pitching in Philadelphia and just everything about it. And then all of a sudden he was sent all the way across the country to pitch in a market where nobody knew what he was pitching for the most part, which is unfortunate for the Mariners. So he wasn't a bubbly, fun guy to be around that I remember, but I think the main thing I want to remember about him, Tim, was he was two different people when he was here the first time and the second time.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I know he had a ton going on in his personal life at that time with his son. So, like you said, there's no point in speculating on exactly why that was. The final game of that month of June of 2011, it was a start against the Red Sox. And at that time, history doesn't necessarily reflect this, but it was as big a game as I think I've ever attended. They were both coming off huge off seasons. The Phillies had brought Cliff Lee back. The Red Sox had signed traded for Adrian Gonzalez and signed Carl Crawford. They were World Series favorites. Lee had thrown two consecutive complete games, and then in this game, he carried a no-hitter into the sixth inning. He eventually settled for a two-hit complete game shutout. And at least since Citizens Bank Park has opened, that energy that was at the park in 2011, and specifically during those stretches when Lee got hot, I've never seen anything like it. And I was wondering if you kind of shared that same view.
I do remember. You know, it really started like around 2007, 2008, where the crowd started to really get into the games because obviously the team was so good and won the World Series in 08. And then you had another team headed to the World Series in 09 and then winning again in 2010 and then Lee coming back in 2011. So that ballpark was so loud and so electric so many nights. But you're right about that night. You know, it's the Red Sox. It's the Red Sox with all those great players that they had. You don't get the chance to play them that often, obviously. And you want your guy to dominate. I remember Hamels doing that one night to them, too, in a game. And that place was on fire that night. And doesn't he go out and pitch another shutout that night? And what, go 5-0 that, or whatever he went that month, winning all those games that month with the lower and run average. And he rose to the occasion that night. And, you know, you remember how he used to run on the field and run off, too. You know, he had that little hesitation move he'd make, and then he'd run off. And he'd do that thing before every inning where he'd kind of act like he was pitching out towards the outfield a little bit, and the crowd would get into that. Every movement that he made in that time I keep harking back as a guy that was lucky enough to watch Steve Carlton when the ballpark would just absolutely explode and light up when he would pitch. And that's what it was like with Lee in that month, and especially that night against the Boston Red Sox in that game.
Yeah, and I remember playing, I forget if it was Connie Mack or a little bit before that at that time, but all of a sudden every pitcher, especially left-handed ones, were trying to do his windup instead of walking off the field. They were doing that thing where they skip over the, depending which side your dugout's on, the first or third baseline.
Yeah.
There were so many people that wanted to be like Cliff Lee at that time. And he didn't have the same amount of great years with the Phillies that Steve Carlton or even Cole Hamels had. But in terms of dominance in my lifetime, Roy Halladay, Curt Schilling, and Cliff Lee are at the top. From your perspective, where does Cliff Lee's peak rank in terms of dominance from Phillies starters and even just from Phillies in general?
Oof. Well, that's hard to say because you have to start with Carlton and leave it there. And Robin Roberts. Robin Roberts' numbers are just off the charts in a different era, in the era that he pitched in and pitched against all those great, great players that he faced all the time. And back in those days when they started the game, they were going to complete it. That was the idea. Well, I think the thing that I noticed about Lee and Halladay right away was they had pitched so much in the American League with the DH that they weren't used to coming out of games. They didn't want to come out of games. And that's another reason that you just love them so much was you really believe when the game starts, you might have a night off for your bullpen, and the bullpens were becoming more and more a part of baseball day in that era of Doc and Lee when they were over with us. So it they fought the managers, they fought everybody to stay in the game. I mean, if you remember, Roy Halladay made himself a pretty good bunter, and a guy that could actually put the ball in play in the time that he was with us so that he could stay in the game a little longer. Lee Early could do those things. Lee could hit a home run every once in a while or threaten it, put the ball in play a lot, and was an excellent bunter, could really run, too. If you remember, he was really athletic, and he could run. So those two remind me so much of each other. You know, Hamels is in a different – Grant Hamels a different way, I think. But those two remind me of each other because of the way that they pitched and coming over from the American League. I thought that they considered it a failure for them not to pitch a complete game. They did not want to come out. They did not want to be in a game where the manager had to make a move that would take them out of a game. And that's why I think they both worked so hard to try and be good offensive players and good fielders and hold, be able to hold runners on and those kind of things so that they could stay in tighter games in the National League than some other guys may.
Yeah, and we had Ruben Amaro Jr. on the show a few weeks ago, and he talked about Roy Halladay, and he said that he thought the 2011 team had arguably the best roster in his time there, and I think you could take it a step further just in terms of talent and the fact that they did win the most regular season games and say that potentially is the best roster the Phillies have ever had. Just in terms of the talent on the team that year, where does 2011, where does that rank for you compared to some of the late 1970s, early 1980s, and any other teams you've seen?
It's hard to compare that group with the 70s, the late 70s and 80s, Tim, because you didn't have the free agency involved that you had in the era that you're used to. You couldn't keep guys together the way that the Phillies kept guys together for so long out of their farm system that would have been free agents and would have been gone before you could have maybe had the great run that they were able to finally go on with the same guys that had been around for so long, because you didn't have the free agency that you have now, that you have now with the Lee and Halladay era. But when you get down to 2011, I totally agree with Ruben about that. And, you know, we all know what happens. It turns out, hearing about Doc, he may have been done after 2011 too, because that's when he really started to have problems with his back. But I thought that team we had in 2011, the thing that killed it, if you remember, that team won so easily and was just way out in front near the end of the year and lost a bunch of games at the end of September. And when they were losing those games, the St. Louis Cardinals were in an unbelievable run. They were in one-run games, tough games, one after another, and sure as heck didn't come down to the Phillies knocking the Braves out on the last night of the season. The Cardinals coming in as the red-hot team in the playoffs, and the rest is history. I mean, it took five games, but we just couldn't, you know, should have won that second game, and that second game in that series was a game where Lee, I think, had a 3 or 4 run lead and wasn't able to hold it. And then, of course, we lost a 1-0 game in that last game with Halladay and Carpenter. But I totally agree. That roster, I mean, Oswalt was on that team as another pitcher. Hamels, that team really was loaded and had everything. You know, Rollins and Utley and Howard, the prime of their careers right there. And, of course, Howard's career basically ended the same night that maybe the Docs ended with an injury. So that was a team that I really thought was going to go – maybe win another World Series.
Yeah, and Cliff Lee still had a few more good years. He had a strange 2012 year in terms of getting run support. 2013, he was an all-star. And then after that, he was still really good when he pitched but got hurt a ton. But Jimmy Rollins has said since then that he told, I think, his dad after that Game 5 of the 2011 season that he thought the run was over, which it kind of feels like a shocking revelation because I don't think at that time we thought it was over. But did you have any sense after that game that things weren't going to ever be the same again?
Well, I'm not going to tell you that I had a sense it would ever be quite the same again. But, boy, I felt the air go out of the balloon that night, too, when the big guy was laying at home plate. You know, and that night, you almost knew it was an Achilles right away because nothing happened. He didn't touch his knee. He was grabbing the back of his ankle. And he was just laying there, and that was tough. And you knew and you were back in that era too that I'm talking about, where it was tougher to keep your players together, and you had to pay so much money to keep them together, and it was much harder to keep a team the way that you wanted it. But emotionally, yeah, they had won a World Series. I still think they should have beaten the Yankees in 09. I'm sure Joe Girardi would disagree. But then they get hit with a hot Giants team coming into the playoffs the next year, and then that red-hot Cardinal team coming into the playoffs. And it's really hard to maintain that for so many years, what they were able to do. So I'd be the last guy in the world to argue with anything Jimmy says. Jimmy's one of the most prescient people I've ever been around, and smart, and a guy that gets it. And if he were to say that, I find that very interesting, that he was absolutely right, as he was about so many things. But I can't tell you, Tim, that I felt that way, that it was over. But, boy, it was tough leaving the ballpark that night after that 1-0 loss. That was really hard.
Chris Wheeler, he called Phillies games for over 3.5 decades. Chris, thanks for joining Locked On Phillies.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Tim. I still love talking the game, and people like you that still care about what I have to say about it. So anytime, I'm more than happy to go on with you.